This episode had an interesting birth. Joss and I wanted to do an episode that was basically a submarine story. And also the story of what would happen if our people in the middle of space ran out of gas and were boarded by another crew. And that actually became sort of just a tiny part of this story. I remember we were sitting in a restaurant trying to break this, and finally Joss said, what if this episode started with Mal falling into frame?
Like you just did.
Yeah, and it pretty much took off from there. And we talked about this flashback structure, which I was all over because I've had some success with that on Angel. And with these sorts of things, there's a very visual aspect to it because you have to tell the story clearly because we're jumping around in three time frames here. And I believe that David Solomon realized that to its full potential.
Did you pay money for this, sir?
And here's our first flashback 5 years ago.
Wow.
When Mal is showing his ship to Zoe for the very first time.
Honestly,
I love the way that you and David Boyd created a specific look for each of the three time frames. This stuff that was shot for everything that takes place in the deep flashbacks, anything that's 5 years or more than 48 hours in the past, was shot on reversal film.
This color reversal film, this was Boyd's idea, which I was not with at first, but of course ended up loving it.
It's much more saturated, grainier.
And we put a whole bunch of lights outside and put a lot of smoke in to let the whole back end blow out to give it a dreamlike quality. And then, of course, they played it very straight and very normal.
Like real people.
So to take the dreaminess away from this, and he's showing her the ship for the first time, and she's not so thrilled with this whole thing.
There's a nice moment here where Zoe looks down and says, "What's that?" And we don't really see what it is, but Mal says, "I think something must have been living in here." And she's actually pointing to the exact spot where Mal in the present day is actually dying on the floor. And that was sort of a nice touch. And this is a great shot here that David created with a Nathan photo double walking off in the distance and then coming down to actual Nathan here. Now, I actually wrote this in the script where the camera comes down through these grates and we see the blood dripping. I never expected it actually to be achieved.
It's kind of beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah, and it really was. And Lisa Lasik, in post, went in and made the red much redder in that blood.
Uh-huh.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me.
Now, how much prep time did you have on this episode, David?
Hours and hours.
Yeah.
Literally.
The script was a little bit late, wasn't it?
It was a little bit late, but, you know, it was worth waiting for. It's great.
The great thing about working with David Solomon, other than the fact that he's a very talented director, is that he's been doing Buffy for years and years, and so he is not unused to having scripts very late, and he has a very zen attitude about it. He never freaks out.
Nah, nothing to freak out.
But also, we had, you know, we break the stories pretty thoroughly. We outline them before they go to script, so he knew the elements. He knew what the story was going to be. In editorial, we restructured it significantly from the order in which the scenes were in the script to make it clearer. Here's Nathan playing Payne, and very, very well, I think. The thing about Nathan is I just think he's a big star.
He's a big star. We had much discussion about dragging his ass out of this room, and he came up with this pained, wounded walk that he was going to use again and again in the show, and he just sold this.
Yeah, it's great because, you know, in most of these scenes where he's alone on the ship, he is, in fact, alone on the ship, and he has to communicate everything through his performance. And I think he does very, very well, and it really helps identify for the viewer where we are and what point in time we are.
Right.
And now we come up in that great wipe shot to about 24 or 48 hours earlier from the time we saw Nathan dragging his sorry carcass out of the cargo bay. This was an interesting scene to write because what I wanted to make sure that I did was get enough exposition into this scene. One of the things that this episode was trying to do was introduce to the audience characters that they didn't get to meet in the pilot that did not air. And so a lot of this backstory really was for that purpose. And in this conversation, you'll hear people referred to as what their characters are or what their relationships are. The word wife, the word husband, the word fugitive, the word doctor, the word preacher, all those words appear in the scene just to really help people understand who these people are so that they can follow the story.
I read this scene and I thought, oh my goodness, 5 pages, 11 people, 9 people. This is going to take all day. This is before I had met this cast and realized how great they were and how completely committed to these roles they all were. They sat down and sat at this table like they had been sitting there for the last 3 years. And they were so comfortable in these characters. Not one of them broke. And, you know, in a shot, like in a scene like this, it's take after take after take just to get all the different angles. And they were up for it every single time. All of them. I was amazed by this. This is the scene where I realized how phenomenally talented these guys were and what a great group they were together.
Well, I really love what you accomplished here. I think it's shot just right, and the performances, I think, are perfect. Because what you really want to do is set this tone of camaraderie right at the top of the story. And I know when writing it, it was difficult because it's one of those things where someone's sitting around telling a funny story, and I couldn't think of anything funny because I had like 2 or 3 days to write this. And what I like doing is coming into this without hearing the joke, just coming into the uproarious laughter and missing the joke, and then actually pretty much putting the beginning of this scene into Wash's point of view.
Right.
Because he walks in late like the audience does, and he wants to know what's so funny. And he actually never gets to hear it. And whatever you imagine was said before you came into the scene is going to be funnier than anything I could
Anything you could
with.
Have ever come up with, that's right. And they went for it every time. They laughed so hard every time that I thought I was missing the joke.
Right, right.
I thought they were telling jokes just before we started running to find out what they were, I ran in to find out what they had said.
So here we're trying to get across a little bit of River's psychic ability. She's starting to sense something.
This is when I had to go to Summer and ask her about River, because this is where I was lost to how far out of it she is. And we had a long, long talk before this scene about where her, what her relationship was with her brother and exactly how far out she needed to be.
Thank you.
Because I was a little confused by this, but, you know, she explained it to me where she, you know, what her relationship was with her brother, and it made this a lot easier to follow.
I just love every little... Adam does an interesting thing. If you watch, you know, the episodes in order, you'll notice that he has to touch something in every scene, practically. I mean, he really created this thing for Jane where he's got to put his hands in things. And you'll notice in this scene, you know, he, of course, touched the cake. Now we're into the submarine movie of it, and the creaking sounds, and of course this explosion is awesome, which is some practical and some CG, if I'm not mistaken.
Some practical, all that stuff blowing off the table really blew off the table and actually hit and hurt people, unfortunately, and Nathan is actually standing in a real hallway with a real fireball coming at him. We were going to do it blue screen with the CG ball, and he was willing to do it, and he did it.
Not a cowardly man.
I think it scared the hell out of him at the time, actually, but you know.
To me, our silence in space never worked better than it did here, because you're going from, you know, the roaring fire, the giant explosions, to just dead silence outside.
I agree, because I actually was very concerned about that when you guys started the series about silence in space, because I had never seen it. I haven't seen it since 2001, and normally I like sounds, but this did really work well.
Yeah, it worked fantastic. And also, the sucking out of the fire into the vacuum of space, I thought worked really well. You know, our Zoic people did amazing effects. And this is great, too. You have some practical effects in here with things on wires and, I think, probably Ritters, giant fans blowing things.
We had giant air movers. And there were 5 or 6 guys with these air movers and things on wires. And it was quite an ordeal for what ended up being a 2-second shot, but a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah. Now, this shot coming up, this shot here, I believe we picked up in second unit.
We did after the fact. This is, we were trying to tie together his, this is after we restructured the show. We tried to tie together these two moments
right.
of him wounded going to the infirmary.
Yeah, because I think the next time we see him, he's actually already up in the engine room. He's coming around for the engine room. And we haven't, actually he's in the infirmary.
Oh, he's about to give himself a shot.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. But that's later.
Yeah, and I felt like we'd lost him. Another reason that we broke this story the way we did was that Gina Torres was about to get married.
That's right.
To Lawrence Fishburne.
She was gone for the first 4 days of shooting.
That's right. She was going to be off on her honeymoon. And so we had to create a story where Zoe gets injured and basically is knocked out for 4 days worth of work so she could go off on her honeymoon.
She got Lawrence Fishburne out of the deal. I think that was worth it.
Yeah.
It's a good exchange.
Well, I think, you know, I don't exactly think that he got the short end of that stick.
No, she's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Yes, Captain.
That's a good girl.
Come on, baby.
I mean, you're strong. Strongest person I ever met. You could do this.
Is she going to make it?
Please. Again, we really wanted to, you know, we really wanted to show Wash's devotion to his wife so that the next flashback had particular resonance.
Right. And this shows him losing it. This shows that he's willing to fight with Mal to make sure that everything's fine with her. He doesn't want to leave her side, but
it's a giant dramatic scene that's really just there to set up a joke. The joke being that there's just something about him she doesn't like, which is coming up in the next flashback. There's a thing that happens here. To me, what was always interesting about this was, of course, Nathan not being a jerk, but being the full-on captain, putting Wash up against the wall. But my favorite thing was that shot that we just saw, which is Adam Baldwin backing up.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know that if Jane is backing up, that...
things must be hell.
It just makes Mal cooler. If he's actually impressing Scary Jane with his force. Again, we're back to that reversal footage. And also, the hilarious mustache. And
a hilarious mustache. This was his call, wasn't it? The mustache?
And he wanted a mustache,
yeah. Yeah. It's great. It really dates him, too. It's perfect.
And I think the gag reel is going to be on this DVD set. And you'll see a moment in the gag reel where both Gina and Nathan had on false mustaches.
We screamed down to hair and makeup and had him put them on instantly, and to the surprise of Alan, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, when he turned.
He turned around and saw them.
Yeah. I love them in this scene. I love the way you shot this. And I think we've set up... Yes, in the previous scene we set up, or at least reiterated the fact, that Kaylee is the mechanic. So when he starts talking about genius mechanic, we're expecting Kaylee to walk through the frame.
And we meet the original mechanic.
And we meet this guy.
Who really could not have been better for this part.
He's perfect. He is perfect.
Her heart stopped.
Maybe someone should get her husband down here.
No. What do you need, Doc?
What's great with all this is the ability to work in this room with a handheld camera. And the style of the show had been from the beginning to use wide, wide lenses and get as close to these people as you can. So you can always feature the room they're in,
yeah.
Which is a big character in the show when you're on a spaceship.
And particularly in an episode like this, where it's about claustrophobia, mm-hmm. and it's about being in a confined space, the entire reason for that adrenaline shot...
Let's take a moment here for the ooh. Ooh!
Ew. The entire reason for the adrenaline shot with Zoe was so that we would understand what he was doing in this scene.
Right.
And that's the way we tried to structure this episode. That everything that came before something that needed explanation was set up.
And see him looking right to her, and then we come back, there they are, the same place.
That's one of my favorite moments.
Yeah, I love that.
So there's an added loop line in here. Joss didn't feel that that we were going out strong enough.
Compression coil blue.
She says, pretty soon we'll start to feel it, and then we won't feel nothing at all. I think it was the loop line that I added off camera. Just so it was very clear that they were going to run out of air.
What a horrible way to die.
What? What is it?
Well, it's worse than just the coil.
How can it be worse?
Main life support's down on account of the engine being dead.
Right, but we got auxiliary life support.
No, we don't. It ain't even on. Explosion must have knocked it out.
So what are we breathing?
Whatever got pumped into the atmo before the explosion shut it all down.
Most of that oxygen got...
And then Adam comes in and confirms it.
Well, whatever's left is what we got.
How long?
Couple of hours.
So we go out on this act break on sort of the A story.
And then we won't feel nothing at all.
Now I think, if I'm not mistaken, the beginning of this act is where we started restructuring things. I think initially in the script, the first scene of this act was Mal coming onto the bridge and confronting Wash.
Right.
And in looking at the episode put together, there was some confusion as to where we were in the story. So really coming back with Gina unconscious really reiterated some expositional things that happened in the previous act, set up the situation. It just made more sense. I think we moved every single scene in this act.
Yeah. Well, Gina having just been hurt was the
threat.
Sort of the driving force of this act, I think. And then everything sort of spins off around that.
Yeah. And also, the other thing I wanted to be clear about was that everyone had been told that they were going to run out of air.
Right.
You know, we didn't see them get told, but coming into these two characters particularly, talking about suffocating, makes us understand that everybody knows. And the moment where he says, it was my birthday, and she looks at him is just so heartbreaking. There's a whole Inara story that we didn't get to tell that you'll see in episodes, little clues. And there is a clue in this scene, in the dialogue, which I will not give away.
Give it away? I don't know it.
I'm not going to give it away.
Okay.
Because it may show up in some other form.
Oh. Oh.
Don't be afraid.
There's Ron, reading the good book.
Ron was interesting because he always had an interesting take on this shepherd character. And Ron, in real life, is a Buddhist.
I did not know that.
Yeah, and a lot of times, you know, he was sort of bringing this Buddhist perspective to the character, and I really had to push him into a more sort of traditional Protestant place.
I didn't know that.
But I love the fact that, you know, he's a brave man, and yet he is frightened. And if he is frightened, and if he is seeking comfort in the Bible and not exactly finding it, then things are bad. This scene, I believe I wrote the night before the morning that you shot it.
This was the first scene we shot.
The scene was not right. It was not done. And I knew that I had to create something that made us understand the science of it without it being about the science. So all this phlebotomist talk about we're going to divert the NavSats to the blah, blah, blah is stuff that I actually, in my own head, justified so that I could understand it, but I wanted to make sure that it wasn't a bunch of technobabble so that you got the joke.
Well, it worked. I got it. Everybody got it. It worked fine. And you know what? They seemed to understand it, and that's half the battle.
They did seem to understand it. Alan, however, showed up, and he had, you know, all this weird, meaningless technobabble, and I remember him being very frustrated that he couldn't remember the lines because he had just gotten them. And his frustration at getting the scene so late really worked for the scene.
Yeah.
Because his frustration is quite clear.
Yes, it plays like he's frustrated the whole time. And but you know what? These guys are great. And you know, ultimately, they love doing the scene together.
Yeah, no,
they love to be able to yell at each other and then make up.
That zoom as he stands is one of my favorite zooms in the series. It's nested into the emotion of the scene. It's not just a gratuitous documentary look zoom. It actually really, it was like orchestrated. I don't know how orchestrated it was, but it sure did work. And I love Adam coming in and breaking the tension.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they seem chastened because of all people, they're getting a moral lesson from him.
Yeah.
But then he says,
yeah, you're supposed to be there.
So that was great.
That was another little insert we shot after the fact to show how it's coming around the corner with the engine part. I forgot what it was called.
The catalyzer.
Catalyzer.
Now, this shot is actually on a memory head, is it not?
It is.
Now, actually, this scene, I believe, was the second scene of this act. This act actually started with Kaylee not being able to fix the catalyzer, which is the next scene.
It's coming up, yes.
The act started with that scene and then went to this scene.
And we learned how we met Kaylee.
Yeah, and we learned how we met Kaylee. And then we went to Zoe and Simon and Inara. And then we went to book, and the last scene of this act was actually the scene on the bridge with the confrontation.
I don't remember now. I think you're right.
Actually, the last scene of this act was still the last scene of this act, but it went from the bridge to Mal dropping the part.
Right. Oh, that's right. That was act two.
But we moved all this stuff around. It just made such better sense when we finally saw it.
I can't remember who came up with the body art for Dax.
I think that was Joss's idea.
It's great.
Joss wanted some body tattoos.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, no, it made perfect sense.
And I love this Maori tribesman look. It's great.
Nothing wrong with your grab boot.
And it just sort of fits his character as the surfer dude, too.
Hello. And I just love what this says about Kaylee.
Yeah.
you know, you get the feeling that she's a dreamer who is sort of stuck on some prairie planet, wherever they're stuck, and that she probably hangs out at the docks. Not that she's a whore.
Right.
But she hangs out at the docks.
She wants to meet some interesting people.
I think mostly she wants to see some cool ships.
Yeah, there's that too.
And I believe the reason, you know, that she's with this guy is because
he can get
he's
on
a mechanic.
Ship. Right.
And that interests her. And I love this. And again, this is just more phony baloney techno babble.
Yeah, but, you know, fun.
You got to plug the blah, blah into the blah, blah. But I just wanted her to, like, rip something out of the thing and, like, patch something together.
And, you know, there was no whole engine there. These guys, I pointed under here and said, look, there's nothing really for them to look at. And these guys took some spare parts and built this crap under here in 5 minutes.
Yeah, no, they're
which
awesome.
Was great.
And I love the way you shot through all this. But you just really wanted the feeling of, you know, somebody who had a natural talent with mechanics and could take a piece of tape and some spit and, you know,
and get the ship running again without any problem.
And, you know, they always end up with, you know, a towel with a bunch of spare parts sitting on it. It's like, I'm not sure what those were for, but I guess we don't need them.
Yeah.
I'll see you do with that. Don't we need this?
I love this. I love him taking his part and shaking it, holding it to his ear.
He's like, he's not sure what this is.
That was completely him. He just, like, did this, and I thought, he's just so perfect for this.
Yeah, he was great.
Want?
You mean?
Sure.
I remember I had this entire sort of speech for Mal, and I'm not sure if it was on the set, or it may have been right before. It may have been one of my last revisions. But when he says "wanna," remember there was a whole thing about.
Oh yeah, yeah. You know what? That was added at the last minute about you want to stay on the ship. Yeah, you want to be. You want to be part of this.
Yeah, because there was a whole thing. Really don't. And walks away from this guy who's like still holding his pants up.
What are you doing?
And that's another one of my favorite cuts. I mean, I just love the fact this is the third time in a row that he has walked into this engine room.
Mm-hmm.
In scene after scene.
Usually she lets me know when something.
And this shows years later how attached she became to the ship and how she takes this all upon herself that she can't make this work.
We got work to do.
This is also where we learn where this engine part goes, and this is the thing that he holds on to as his talisman through the whole episode.
Right. This is where you really, again, you know, in this scene, she is explaining to him what this thing is and where it goes. So that in the next scene, when Mal walks in and tries to put it in, we understand.
We know exactly where it goes. Right.
And that is why this moment exists. I was never happy with the way I wrote this scene. Initially, I had a scene where Mal came in and sort of yelled at her. It was sort of the same scene that happens on the bridge with Wash, where he comes in and yells at him.
Yeah, but it's much better to have her. She's so broken up by the fact the ship doesn't work, and he comes in to do the natural thing to comfort her.
Yeah, and actually it worked great. And I think it was one of Joss's notes, which was he wanted to see how Mal reacted differently with different characters.
Right.
To really sell the idea that he is a great captain.
Right.
So, Mal, now this is the third time he's walked into the engine room.
Right, and here's present day.
And since we just saw Kaylee showing us where this piece went and what it was for and that it was necessary, we understand somehow he got one. And, whoops.
Man, I'm having a bad day.
I always thought that was a great act break.
Well, sure.
And here he is telling the ship.
We've run into a bit of a situation.
All the crew members exactly what their situation is, although we know that they all know this by now.
Yeah.
This is how we're going to save ourselves, if we can.
And what I like to do is, at the top of a third act, which is the halfway point of a show, is to have some kind of restatement of the plot so far. And actually, it worked great in this episode. I love when he reaches up and touches the ship.
Which was written in the script, by the way.
Yes, it was. But you know what? Just because it's written in the script don't mean it's going to be on the screen.
Doesn't mean we do it. It's in the script exactly that. He wants to touch the ship, and he loves this ship. He doesn't want to leave it for anything, and that's what he's telling them. There's enough room for 8 people to escape. I'm going to stay behind and do what I can.
We send both shuttles off in opposite directions.
He's going to go down with his ship. Someone getting seen, maybe picked up. And this is a great moment for Wash too. After all the fighting between Wash and Mal and the dissension between them, it's great that Wash is now completely on board with Mal's plan.
Which you don't know right away here.
That's the arrangement.
Right. It almost looks like he's
being insubordinate one more time.
Yeah.
Captain,
we sent out a beacon. Even managed to boost it a little. By some chance,
get a response. Just all these actors. So great.
They're great. They're hearing his plan. They realize that he is going to go down with the ship. And you know, it's the bravest thing you can hear.
Wash.
And there's Wash being insubordinate. Oh, but no.
Like you said, someone might answer the beacon. And when they do,
it's a moment between the guys.
Call everyone back. Won't take but a minute.
So now we understand what their agenda is.
Shuttle number two ready. I'll see you on Mars.
And they're off to accomplish it. And then it's time for the next relationship to be explored, and that, of course, is Malin and Ara.
Mal.
And I love just cutting into this. I just love that he's on the move. They're going to have this conversation on the move. He's not going to waste a bit of time. And I love her performance here.
Well, she clearly loves him.
The other thing that's important in this episode, and I think you accomplished it very well, is that there's a lot of geography that is made very clear by the way you decide to shoot scenes. Like, we understand that they came out of that common room, up those stairs, and into this shuttle. And of course, now we're back into a flashback.
Not overly.
This was great. You know, being sort of a visitor on the show, it was really fun to show them meeting for the first time.
Yeah.
It was great. It was great to see how all the characters got on board. And to see where their relationship started, you can see the sort of inkling of where they're about to end up in their relationship right from here. There's nothing unattractive about this girl, and he obviously knows it. And this is the basis of everything that happened after this. I mean, this is their first time meeting, and he sells her on the ship, and she clearly is no dummy. She has her demands. She's familiar with what she is, and she lets him know right away that they are equals, and if she's going to be renting the space from him, it's completely her space, and she...
And a few more of those little clues are dropped into this scene, by the way.
But, oh, about what's going to happen with her?
Yeah, I mean, this notion that he's wondering why somebody like her, who could get on basically the Love Boat, or some, you know, giant carnival cruise ship of the future, wants to fly on this tin can.
Yeah.
She's clearly got a secret. She's clearly, if not running from something, running to something.
Well, I'll be sure to. Well, he asks her as much, though.
Yeah, and she denies it. And then we get some nice exposition about the war.
For 1/4 less than your asking price.
Is that a fact?
It is.
Now, the downside of this color reversal film, by the way, is this girl could not really be more beautiful. And this is not the most flattering film for portraits, and yet there she is looking great, and there he is looking great.
Yeah,
I mean, it gives it sort of a greeny yellow tone. It really helps in the storytelling, I think.
Yeah, and green is often the color of desire.
Green was envy.
Green with envy, but if you look at something like Vertigo,
yeah.
Whenever Hitchcock is showing obsession or desire or compulsion, it's very green.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it actually says something about the relationship. One of my favorite cuts coming up. Actually, there's a couple. But when we cut to... Oh, and I love her saying, you don't get to call me whore. Which to anyone who's seen 3 episodes knows that that is one of Mal's favorite words for her.
The Alliance has no quarrel with me. I supported unification.
And we learned that she supported unification. Which I thought was a nice touch, which I actually had in Bushwhacked initially, in her conversation with Simon, but I took it out because it was running quite long.
I didn't know that. I thought that was still in there.
Absolutely.
It's in here.
This is it instead.
Now, this is a great cut because of the performances. I mean, she is so different in this scene than she was in that previous scene. I mean, we really understand that they have forged a relationship.
How long they've come.
Yeah.
How long they've come.
And she's so comfortable in this place.
Right.
Which is great, because I know you shot it the same day.
Come with us.
Can't.
And I have to say, this moment always gets me. When he says everybody dies alone.
I'm not leaving. You know, it was one of those things that you read on paper and you think, oh my God, it's a little too dramatic, and they both thought so, and man, if he didn't deliver it every time.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone got choked up on the set because he just could do it.
He really can. And it's great because you're in that emotional space and then you come into here and all is forgiven.
In cold space. And look how they're always playing the cold.
Now, I have to tell you an interesting story about that red button. Joss was adamant about that red button. You know, make sure that it's clear. We need to understand. And he was absolutely right. And in fact, there's a shot later in the episode that I'll mention Lisa and I believe you, all agreed it should not be there. But Joss made us put it in.
Oh, it was the second shot of the red button in that scene. Yeah.
And he was absolutely right.
Yeah.
But after we got canceled, and Joss was feverishly working on ways to resurrect Firefly, he got that button delivered to his office. Alan Tudyk had taken it off the set.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And he sent Joss a note that said, "When your miracle gets here, just push this button."
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I thought that was a great story. It's one of my favorite Adam performances.
I picked that button out of a box and pointed to a place where they could screw it into the side. And they, I never saw the button in his office. I want to go see it now.
It worked great.
That was a great performance for Adam. Sorry, I just went right over that.
I love when Adam just turns and leaves.
Yeah.
It's like, well, he leaves. That's not really the inside of that shot.
That's not. It's a translite that was built for this episode.
Yeah. Now, this shot here is actually one of the shots in the opening montage. Once he clears frame and it was clear, we actually used it in the opening montage and slowed it down. I'm sorry, but I love this. I love this whole sequence. The two shuttles going off in opposite directions. And Mal closing every door behind himself.
He's trying to save the air. Trying to keep what little he has.
And him walking through the wreckage of the one happy time in the story.
Yeah.
But I just thought Nathan sold this.
He really did. He's very businesslike in this, which is exactly how he should be.
And him coming and getting this army blanket is a brilliant touch. And I think that was you.
You know, at the time I said, "Oh my God, this is taking too long. We can't just let him get his army blanket forever." I kept watching and kept watching because I was so mesmerized by the methodical nature of him that I just let it play. And there was no way to get out of it. Yeah. It was just like it is.
That's one thing we've been able to do on all three shows is to take our time with things that other shows, would want to get to the next line of dialogue.
Right.
And I remember there was an Angel episode that I wrote that David Semel directed, which is a 50s flashback. And there was a lot of similar... just long,
good,
sustained
long moments, yeah.
Silence. And Mal walking through the ship and closing all those doors behind him, I think, is what this whole story is about.
Right, it's worth playing that long.
Fireflies, Jessica, you're distressed.
This is when the ship arrives.
I thought this guy was great.
He was great. And here we're sure that Mal has missed the entire event.
And this scene actually...
And possibly dreamt it.
Yeah. And actually, this shot coming up here, where the ship comes up into frame, that was originally the act break.
Well, that's right.
We went out on this moment.
That's right.
And Joss is, it's not Jeopardy.
Right.
It's got to be guys with guns. And I really fought him on, continuing this and making the act break the guys walking in with the guns. But you know what? Once again, Joss Whedon, not wrong.
Yeah, well, we played that, and the original music temp cue we put in there was a danger cue, but it really wasn't about that, because the guy was saying, "I'm here to help you," and Mal missed the event, and it really was about him, did I just dream what I just, or did I just hear a guy talking to me? And then when the ship arrives outside the window, it really is, it should be more hopeful.
Right.
And this is when the jeopardy begins in here.
But for some reason, everything feels ominous in this.
Well, that's good.
Which I like.
That's a good thing.
And there was a much longer conversation between these two men. That we just trimmed significantly in the editing room. Because all you really need is, I have your thing, I'll let you on, I better not see a gun.
Right. But, Mal being suspicious of him really tells a lot about their lives out in space, too.
Yeah. And also, it could not make Mal cooler.
Yeah.
He's about to run out of air, and he's like, I better not see I better see that part before I let you on.
Right, and that's good for him because he, they understand their life out there. And actually, it told me a lot about that, reading that one scene. It told me a lot about their lives.
And another nice touch that you realized for me, which is that air washing over him.
Yeah.
And now our new act break.
I am so stupid.
Yeah, and it's like, we know something's going to happen, but it still works as an act break.
Check him.
If I have one regret about this episode, if there's one thing I would change, is that the gun that he finds underneath
you shoot him.
On the scooter?
On the scooter thing. I wish that it had been two pieces of a big shotgun that he snapped together. Because when he comes up with that giant pop gun, or that tiny pop gun, it's, you know.
Not quite as manly.
This is, you know, this is how we meet Jane. And again, you know, David Boyd continues to impress. Because this is not a desert. This is the stage.
This is a big sound stage with a bunch of dirt on it and a huge, huge backdrop.
And I love this guy who plays Marco, who's, I think, probably Russian or Georgian. Joss actually thought he was French when he first saw this. He'd come in to read for a character in Janestown.
Yeah.
And I thought he was so interesting, but we cast somebody else. And I just love bringing him into this.
Point of interest. This is the one guy I didn't get a chance to meet before he showed up. To shoot us might not work. And so we just met this day and went over this dialogue again and again. I had a little trouble with his accent at first, but he's great in this.
Yeah,
he's a guy who just got it right away. Just read it and got it.
Now, you were saying that this film stock isn't great for portraits, but I think in this fake daylight stuff...
Well, in the daylight...
They couldn't look more creamy and beautiful.
No, in the daylight, I'm all over it. I love this stuff. You found the goods. And, you know, having put up a little bit of fight to not use it, I'm sorry I did, and now, of course, it's... I'll consider this my signature piece, and I'll use this again and again on shows.
Well, it really helps identify very quickly for the viewer.
The time periods, it's great. It's great. And this scene really, this is my favorite scene using this stuff, too, by the way.
And I just think this is such a, this may have been the reason to do these flashbacks. I remember when Joss and I were breaking this story, you know, we talked about, you know, possibly Jane gets hired. You share a bunk. He's got a gun on Mal, and Mal sort of talks him into coming over to the other side.
Really? Jane, this ain't funny. Which is really just all about his next good deal. Better place to sleep, a little better
bunk,
a little bit better food, a little bit bigger cut in the smuggling. You know, a perfectly charming bad guy. Pull one of the kitchen,
whole shot. And I just love Mal as they're just sitting there with their hands up, but they have complete control of the situation, which is great. A bigger room. And then we come back in and Mal's still got his hands up.
Yeah.
Which is nice because you go from one ridiculous situation to something that's actually quite dire. I was sad when this aired and they wouldn't let us air at 16 by 9 because this shot really needed that full frame.
Already decided.
Yeah. I just love him just shooting him right in the stomach.
I love that.
Don't make a big deal out of it.
Right, it's just time to get shot.
Yeah.
And damned if he didn't take a great hit.
Yeah.
Just went right down
on
his
ass. And you know he gets shot, but it's still shocking. That's my only sadness.
Yeah.
That tiny little gun.
That wasn't a big damn gun.
Yeah, because it would have been nice if he came up with just some big-ass thing. Because it's a little hard to believe that all these armed people don't just gun him right down. Although, having...
We can do some pickups. I think we can still get out to that set and shoot some stuff. We need to. I can find Carrie Meyer, and we can recreate that room.
That set is gone. And there it is.
There's the part of all the parts. That's how it got there. And
I remember Joss wanted us to just find Mal lying in the cargo bay in the first sequence, in the teaser.
We can hardly see
it. I felt very strongly that he needed to fall into that frame.
Right.
He needed to be in action so that when it happens again here, that we understand, okay, we're right back where
we started.
And
that was a last-minute addition in the script for me, and I thought it was great.
Yeah, I just wanted to be clear.
This is right where the story began.
Right. These effects are great. I love that ship that Lonnie created.
Yeah, they're
so interesting.
Great.
It looked like a giant crab.
Yeah.
And we've just seen basically all the places that he had to drag himself through. And we come back really to that exact moment when he dropped it before, which really apparently wasn't that big a deal.
Right. Yeah, it turned out it wasn't that hard to get. But this is, because of the reordering of the script, this is such a long way away from when he dropped this that... the fact that he dropped it and went through that hole really told us where we were going to come to later. I mean, it really sets up this moment. So no matter how far away these moments ended up being, you still know exactly where you are.
Where. And interestingly, this scene came in Act 3.
Right.
It was in Act 3. He got the air going. And I don't understand why I ever had it like that. But I did. And then we realized, well, clearly it needs to come here. There's that shot of that button we didn't want in there. And Josh was exactly right. It needed to go. That was actually Alan Easton's hand, the cameraman's hand.
That, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That's Alan walking down here by himself.
And this is great. It just shows you how far he has to go to get back to that button. And again, you know, I think it's hypnotic. And back to the button.
Watch this little light glint on the button. Look at that, right down the bottom of the frame.
Nice. And this, I was always afraid was going to be funny. That he would just, like, boom, fall out of frame. And you know what? With that man, not funny.
Well, you know, this is where we said, let's have him fall out of frame in one shot and do an alternate version where we go off the button.
And we use pieces
onto
of both.
Him and we use them both. Didn't expect to, but
this,
it worked great.
This voiceover montage was a thing we added at the last minute.
Right, him waking up.
And even though this is really the story of how he met each of his crew, excluding the people who are actually passengers on the ship, but the original crew,
right,
which is Zoe, who was with him in the war, Wash, who is his pilot, and Jane, who is his merc, and Inara, who is the ambassador. This is really the story of his love affair with the ship,
yes,
and what that ship means to him. Which is why you hear the used spaceship salesman in the beginning talking about she's a real beauty, and Mal repeating some of those very words to Zoe when he first shows her the ship.
Right.
And of course, we're going to get to that grace note here in a moment.
And all you get in the very first scene how much the ship means to him and how excited he is to be on it while he's showing it to her. You don't really get how he fell in love with the ship until the end here.
Right. But the ship, as he says in the teaser, means everything to him. It means freedom. It means a chance at a life. It means not having to be under anyone's thumb.
But that description could apply to any ship. And then this shows you exactly how much it turned out to be this ship
that he
fell in love with. And all the people that make it run.
Good work.
Thanks. All right. I have to insist the captain needs to rest.
And also, the reason I think I put the line in here, you know, will you all be here when I wake up? Because we had so many flashbacks, we were in so many different time frames, that I wasn't... Well, first of all, I felt like he would be wondering if he were hallucinating. But I wanted to make sure that the audience understood that we were now, for the first time in this story, in real time.
Everything's okay. Yeah, and we're finally back. Yeah, we're finally back in our real time.
I mean, you know, you could say, oh, so here we go to the used car, or to the used spaceship lot. And the thing that I just loved about the way this worked out, although I hate that ship, but the thing that I loved about the way this worked out is that the entire time you think this used spaceship salesman is selling him serenity, no one had to sell him serenity because he sees her like a beautiful woman across a crowded
off
room.
Off in the distance.
And that's me. And that look on Nathan's face is just perfect. And you realize this whole story has been about that particular relationship.
Nice.
So thanks for listening to us babble about a thing that we had a lot of fun making. That's David Solomon.
That was me. I was excited to be part of this episode. I love this show.
And you should watch the next episode, which is on your DVD. I'm just not sure what it is since they aired them all out of order.